Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the Hopkins versus Murat conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, there will be an opportunity for questions and comments. Instructions will be given at that time. As a reminder, this conference call is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference call over to our host for today, Lisa Milner. Lisa, please go ahead.
Thanks, Griselda. Hi, everyone. I am filling in for Kelly Swanson. She is under the weather, so I'm just going to introduce Bruce Binko, Chief Operating Officer and Chief Marketing Officer, who will be hosting today's call and doing the introductions on behalf of Golden Boy. So thank you, and Bruce, please go ahead.
Thanks, Lisa. Morning, everybody. I wanted to welcome you all to this call. We are obviously very excited and enthusiastic for what promises to be a fantastic card next weekend in Atlantic City, New Jersey. Obviously, we're here to talk to the participants in the main event, Bernard Hopkins and Carl Murat. But just for the record, the rest of the card for the evening will feature Peter Kid Chocolate Quillen fighting Gabriel Rosado in a 12-round WBO middleweight championship bout, and also heavyweights Deontay Wilder and Nikolai Fertha in a 10-round WBC Continental Americas championship bout. It's Saturday, October 26th at Boardwalk Hall, brought to you by Golden Boy Promotions in association with Caesars Atlantic City. The sponsors, as usual for Golden Boy events, are Corona Beer and AT&T Wireless. And the fight will be seen on Showtime Championship Boxing at 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific. We'll also have a secondary audio program in Spanish for those that want to watch in Spanish. And there are still some tickets available. The prices are $300, $150, $75.50, and starting at $25. They're available at Boardwalk Hall box office and all Ticketmaster locations as well. I think that the anytime Bernard fights is an event. I think we collectively maybe take for granted that Bernard's been around for a long time and possibly will be around forever, but I can assure you I'm almost 100% sure that won't be true. So we're really excited to see Bernard defend his light heavyweight belt, his IBF light heavyweight belt. So I wanted to start off this call by introducing the promoter for Carl Murat, who's going to be the man that's going to attempt to derail Bernard's plans of defending his title. And that would be Kelly Stauerland. And Kelly will introduce you to Murat and take questions after that. Kelly?
Good afternoon, or good evening as it would be for me, but wherever you are, good morning or good afternoon. Look, Carl Murat is, for a lot of you guys, probably not so well known yet. But he has been with us since 2006. He comes from a very tough background. Is a fighter who's earned his chance back 2 years ago, and has long waited for this moment. And it's a fight for him where there's not much to lose, but of course the world to gain. We know we're going as the underdogs. We have a lot of respect for Bernard Hopkins and, of course, his achievements. But the respect, of course, will go out the bell, out the window as soon as the first bell goes. That's something that Caro has promised me. And, it's something that, to coin an English phrase, it's, of course, he's the underdog, but every dog has its day. And that's something that we, of course, hope that will happen on October 26th. And we believe in our man, Carl Murat, and would like to pass the microphone over to Mr. Murat.
Yeah, hello, guten Abend.
Yeah, hi, this is Carl Murat.
Ich bin Caro, wie man schon mich kennt, der Hawkins seine Träume zerstören will, wie mein Promoter schon gesagt hat.
As his promoter says, he wants to derail Hopkins' plans of defending the world title belt.
Ich freue mich riesig auf diesen Chance, dass es endlich geklappt hat, nach all diesen schweren Wegen.
He's really enthusiastic to finally get his crack at a world title after such a long time.
Das wird ein sehr, sehr spannender Kampf sein für die ganze Welt, für die ganze Boxwelt. Ich freue mich auf meine Aufgabe.
It's going to be a good, intensive, hard fight in the US for him, the first time in the US. And he likes his chances against Hopkins. That's his statement.
Okay, let's open it up for questions. Thank you.
If you would like to ask a question or have a comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. This will place you in the question queue. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. And our first question comes from Dan Raphael with ESPN.
ESPN, yes, the father.
Hello, everybody. I have a question for Caro. And my understanding, by the way, Bernard will be on the call a little bit later. Is that right, Lisa?
Yep, he's going to be on right after Caro.
Okay. My question for Caro is I'm wondering, when he's watched any of Bernard's recent fights, does he look like a 48-year-old fighter to Caro Moret, and what does he think of the amazing legacy that Bernard has carved out by still being, you know, at or near the top of his game at age 48 years old?
Caro, wenn du dir die letzten Kämpfe angeschaut hast, sieht er da wie ein 48-Jähriger aus, und was sagst du zu seiner bisher beispiellosen Karriere, im Alter von 48 Jahren noch Weltmeister zu sein?
Ja, also ich habe seine Karriere immer verfolgt. I've
always followed his career up to when I was like 12, 13 years old.
Und ich muss wirklich sagen, ganz ehrlich, Respekt, was er bis jetzt gebracht hat, in allen Gewichtsklassen Weltmeister zu werden.
And I appreciate his accomplishments. He was the undisputed world champion at middleweight. He's now a world champion at light heavyweight, and I have all the respect in the world for him.
Ich muss auch sagen, er hat wirklich sehr tolle und erinnerungsvolle Kämpfe abgeliefert.
And I have to say that he had sometimes tremendous fights. Sometimes when he weren't given the chance, that he would go as a winner, but still winning his fights.
Und ich muss auch sagen, Respekt, dass er mit 48 Weltmeister geworden ist.
And I respect him for for winning the world title at age 48.
Aber ich muss auch eins sagen, das hat man schon gesehen, dass er schon alt ist, weil er hat nicht mehr diese Spritzigkeit gehabt.
But I have to say one thing. You see the mileage on him. So he to me, he looks like a 48-year-old. He doesn't have the speed anymore. He may had with 30 years old.
Er hat versucht, viel zu sammeln, viel über seine Erfahrung zu bekommen.
He tries to clinch a lot and to get over or to win a fight with his experience. And that's it. I respect him, but I will try to beat him.
All right, that's great. Thank you very much for that answer. Appreciate it. Good luck, Caro. See you guys next week.
Take care, Dan.
Our next question comes from Lem Satterfield with RingCV.com.
Hey, Caro. Thanks for taking our call. Wanted to ask you, you talked about the mileage that you see on Hopkins, but no one ever, there's been few fights where we've seen that. My question to you is, this is your first time, as I understand it, in the U.S. You're fighting a legend, and, you know, it's close to his hometown where you're fighting. What do you tell your detractors about your chances? How do you convince them that you really have a shot?
Wie würdest du die Leute, die Experten davon überzeugen, dass du wirklich eine Chance hast, ihn zu sagen? Die Umstände sind ja, du kennst in den USA, das ist sehr nah an seiner Heimatstadt dran. Man hat selten, also die meisten haben selten gesehen, dass er wirklich wie ein 48-Jähriger aussieht. Was sagst du den Leuten? Wie willst du diese überzeugen?
Ja, also meine Überzeugung ist einfach davon, weil ich bin in sehr guten Verfassung.
Yeah, I'm in real good shape.
Ich bin wirklich sehr glücklich, dass ich überhaupt diesen Kampf mache.
I'm happy to get this chance.
Ich bin jetzt 30 geworden, ich fühle mich wirklich sicher, ich fühle mich sicher sehr stark.
I'm 30 years old now. And I'm physically and mentally on top of my game.
Ich denke, das ist der richtige Zeit gekommen, um dich zu besiegen.
And you know, the time is now to beat Hopkins.
Den haben wir auch gesehen, als Hopkins damals gegen Cloud geboxt hat, das war vor einigen Zeiten. Alle haben gesagt, okay, das ist Hopkins Zeit gekommen, er geht jetzt zu Rentner.
Oh, when Hopkins fought Cloud, a lot of people already said that the time has come and he is going to lose and going to retire.
Aber Hopkins hat den jungen Mann geschlagen und alle überzeugt, dass er doch gewinnen kann mit 48.
But he schooled him and showed the world that he's still ready and a good 48-year-old boxer.
So werde ich den ganzen Welt überraschen und auch Hopkins, dass ich ihn besiegen kann. Okay.
But I'm going to surprise a lot of people.
Und wie ich jetzt sehe, Hopkins hat 1988 in Atlantic City seinen ersten Profikampf gemacht.
And as I see it, he had his first pro fight in 1988 in Atlantic City.
Ja, und Hopkins muss langsam auch einsehen, er ist schon alt für das Boxsport. Es ist auch jetzt die Zeit gekommen, dass wir wieder in Atlantic City kämpfen und Hopkins endlich sich verabschiedet von dem Boxsport.
And so he has to see that the time has come. We are fighting again in Atlantic City. So it will be a good closing out for him to finally retire by the hands of mine. And yeah, that was a statement.
That's interesting. Okay, and then one specifically, you've said what pretty much every opponent has said about him. You know, Tavoris Cloud was undefeated. He thought he was going to beat Hopkins. What specifically, when you say you see mileage, what specifically are you talking about in terms of the evidence of mileage in Bernard Hopkins? Because he didn't look like he was old when he fought Tavoris Cloud.
Yeah, I would translate it to him. Es geht darum, was hast du gesehen, also dass er wirklich schon so halt wie ein 48-Jähriger aussieht. Was siehst du in dem Kampf? Weil Cloud war auch unbesiegt, war ein junger Boxer, ähnlich wie du. Und da hat man Hopkins auch nicht diese 48 Jahre angesehen. Aber was siehst du speziell?
Ja, was ich überhaupt an dem Kampf gesehen habe, dass Cloud überhaupt ganz dumm geboxt hat.
Ja, I see a dumb fighter when I saw Cloud boxing Hopkins.
Deswegen hatte einen 48-jährigen Mann erlaubt, ihn zu besiegen.
That's why he allowed Hopkins to beat a 40-year-old man. Aber irgendwas anderes Spezielles, Carlo?
Spezielles, was man an Hopkins gesehen hat, man sieht ganz deutlich an seinen Haaren, man sieht, dass er graue Bart hat.
Okay,
manchmal glaube ich das nicht, dass er wirklich 48 Jahre alt ist, aber man merkt schon an seinem Gesicht und wenn man genau beobachtet.
As a person, you see that he's growing old because of his gray hair and his gray beard. Aber irgendwas Spezielles? Ja, boxerische Seite?
Boxerische Seite. Ich habe ja vorhin gesagt, man hat ja gesehen, er ist nicht so spritzig. Er macht zwei Kombinationen und hält gleich fest.
Okay. He says that he sees or he saw in the fight with Cloud that Bernard has pretty much the experience that none other boxer has, but you see that he's just trying to get one punch or one-two combination of it, and then clinch. And clinching is the state of his game.
And er war früher nicht so. Er war früher sehr aktiv, sehr aggressiv, und das hat man jetzt gesehen.
Okay, and the years before, when like he was a middleweight, when he was the middleweight champion, you didn't saw that much clinching. You saw him beating people with ease. But nowadays, you see with the clinching and just the 1-2 punch. You see that he's grown out. He may say that he has conditioning, but I don't think so, and I think it will go over it.
Okay. All right. I appreciate your answers. One last question, if you don't mind. Yes, he clinches, and yes, he's done all of those things, but how do you stop him from doing those things? Because that's how he wins. Thank you for my question.
Okay. Wie willst du denn dieses Clinchen verhindern? Was ist denn dein Rezept dafür?
Diesen Rezept, das behalte ich für mich, das zeige ich euch am 26.
Okay. So he says that he won't tell anybody about his recipe, how to break the clinches, but he guarantees you that he will do it.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
Our next question comes from Jake Donovan with BoxingScene.com.
Okay, just two questions for Caro. One, I know this fight has been scheduled several times, and he also has only had one fight in the past 2 years. I just want to know what he's done to prevent from overtraining and also what he's done to prevent from just going crazy these past 2 years.
Okay. Es geht ja darum, der Kampf wurde ja mehrere Male angesetzt. Und jetzt geht es darum, wie hast du das verhindert, dass du vielleicht übertrainiert in diesen Kampf gehen wirst oder dass du vielleicht verrückt geworden bist in diesen 2 Jahren, weil du ja keinen Kampf hattest. War das ein Problem für dich?
Das war, muss ich sagen, kein Problem, als der Kampf erstmal abgesagt wurde wegen unserer Visum.
That was no problem at all?
Ja, yeah. Wir haben ganz normal vorbereitet für den Kampf und dann, als wir gesehen haben, dass es kein Visum gibt, dann haben wir ganz normal pausiert, als wenn ich einen Kampf hätte.
Okay, I just prepared for the first meeting with Bernard, and when the problem with the visa came up, I just took a break, and after we got the confirmation, I think it was 2 or 3 days later, I just started training again. So I have that mental edge at the moment that nothing can break me out of my groove, I would say.
Und ich habe in der Zeit ganz normal mich erholt, als wenn ich schon geboxt habe, und habe das ganze Training nochmal aufgenommen, wie es sein muss.
Okay. So when I took the break, I just relaxed and see it as if I have already had a fight. Getting down to it, and afterwards when I started training, it was like as if I got up to a new fight, was starting all over again.
Aber ob das mich schon verrückt gemacht hat, das würde ich nicht sagen, aber es war schon ein bisschen ärgerlich, muss ich sagen.
I wouldn't say that it made me crazy to wait that long to get my chances for a world title. But it was a little bit disappointing to not have a fight in such a long time.
Okay.
One thing, Jake, that you should also take into account is that he's part of Team Sauerland, and we have our guys train pretty much all under the same center. So whether it's, I don't know, Arthur Abraham, Jürgen Bremer, Mikkel Kessler, Robert Voger, Eddie Gutknecht, all these guys we have, in Germany, we don't have many of the smaller classes. They're all there or thereabouts around that weight, and he's of course been kept very active.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I appreciate that clarification. And then I just have one more question. There was one of the fights that was on the table during these 2 years was a title shot against Cloud. Was it frustrating for him to watch someone else beat Tavares Cloud, knowing that he can do it himself? What does he see more satisfaction in beating a legend like having the chance to beat a legend like Bernard Hopkins?
Okay. War es für dich frustrierend, dass du mit ansehen musstest, wie Hopkins eigentlich deine Chance bekommen hat gegen Cloud, um zu sehen, wie Hopkins Cloud schlägt? Und dann die nächste Frage war dann gewesen, wie siehst du deine Chancen gegen eine Legende wie Bernard Hopkins?
Um ehrlich zu sein, ich habe mich sehr gefreut, dass diese Entscheidung überhaupt kam. Es ist mir viel wertvoll, gegen eine Boxlegende zu kämpfen.
Okay. To be honest, I would say that looking back, I'm really happy that Hopkins beat Cloud and fought Cloud, because now I get the chance to fight a legend in Bernard Hopkins, and that's much more than if I would have gotten in a fight versus Cloud, if he would have beaten Hopkins.
Ich bin ganz happy, wirklich, dass es so geklappt hat. Und
deine Chancen?
Meine Chancen, das werden wir am 26. sehen.
Aber irgendwas anderes?
Was soll ich sagen?
Was glaubst du denn? Wie deine Chancen stehen, Hopkins zu besiegen, gegen die Legende zu boxen?
Gegen eine Legende, das ist das. Ich bin ein Fighter, ich kann boxen, ich habe einen Ring intelligent und genau, das sind meine Chancen.
Okay. Okay, I see myself as a boxer as well as a fighter. To go up when it gets tough, and I would say that's my chances as well as my ring intelligence. It's up to battle of ring intelligence.
Deswegen stelle ich mich von dem Kampf. Ich mag es, gegen die Besten zu boxen, und Hopkins ist einer der besten Halbschwergewichte. Deswegen freue ich mich auf meine Aufgabe.
So Hopkins is one of the best light heavyweights. I want to box the best, and that's why I'm enjoying this fight. That's his statement.
And the last question for Mr. Murat comes from Jenna Day with OPR Boxing Radio.
Hi, Carl. The question I have for you is, the last time a German boxer came over to the United States to fight an aging legend that was a champion was your countrymate Axel Schultz in 1995. I'm curious for you. He came up very short, you know, just close in that fight. I'm curious for you, what would it mean to you to be a legend like Bernard Hopkins and bring that championship over, not just becoming a champion, but also bringing that back over to Germany?
Good question.
Das letzte Mal, wo ein alter Champion, wo ein Deutscher rüber in die USA gegangen ist und einen alten Champion geschlagen hat, war 1995, Axel Schultz gegen George Foreman. Genau, wie siehst du da einen Quervergleich? Und wie glaubst du, kann es irgendwie, ist es sowas hilfreich, Unterstützung zu sehen, dass ein Deutscher so gut aufgetreten ist, oder jemand, der in Deutschland kommt?
Ja, natürlich. Ich finde, die amerikanische Boxkämpfe, es geht jetzt nicht unbedingt, dass es in Amerika ist, dass Hopkins Vorteile hat.
Yeah, I know it's now about the fights in the U.S., and it's not about Hopkins being an advantage because the fight is in the U.S.
Genau, und ich habe auch schon immer gesehen, wenn in Amerika jemand boxt und jemand ist besser als der andere, die Zuschauer stehen für den anderen.
Okay. When I watch those fights and I see that the better fighter won, but he it's not about the decision, but you see the real decision when the crowd stands behind the real winner, and that's not always the guy the judges see winning.
Deswegen hoffe ich auf eine faire, gerechte Punktrichter und Ringrichter, und der Rest hängt es von mir ab.
Okay, I'm just hoping for an impartial referee, good judges, and the rest is up to me.
All right, well, thank you so much for answering my question, Carl.
Please?
We actually have one more question for Mr. Murat,
okay.
Then we will make the transition over to Mr. Hopkins. So go ahead with that last question, Griselda.
Our last question comes from Eddie Goldman with No Holds Barred.
Thank you very much. Hello, everybody. Carl, since this is your first fight in the U.S., and I think it's your first fight for a major world title. Could you talk a little bit about, for those that aren't familiar, with your background, how you ended up in Germany and how you got into boxing?
Das ist ja deine erste Weltmeisterschaftschance in den USA auch noch. Kannst du vielleicht ein bisschen was erzählen, wie du mit dem Videoboxen gekommen bist, wie du angefangen hast?
Also ich bin mit 13 Jahren zu Boxen gekommen.
I started boxing at the age of 13.
Ehrlich zu sein, ich habe Schule gemacht und danach haben wir nichts zu tun gehabt.
And to be honest, I just went to school, but didn't know what I have to do with myself in the spare time.
Und ich habe Geschwister.
Okay. And I have brothers.
Und die haben eines Tages mich mitgenommen zu boxen.
And then one day they took me with them to the boxing gym.
Obwohl sie talentiert waren als ich, und sie haben jetzt aufgehört.
And those two brothers they were also boxers, but they were more talented than me, but they stopped.
Ja, und so hat es dann immer mehr Siege gegeben und
I won and won, so I got in touch with Solan Event.
Genau.
I started my professional boxing career.
Genau. Ich habe nie gedacht, dass ich eines Tages gegen Hopkins boxe.
And I never thought that I would have one day meet such a legend like Bernard Hopkins inside the ring. So what Carlos said before is that hard work pays off. It's not always a talent. That's his answer.
Where exactly was that when you started? Was that in Germany or is that in Iraq?
War das in Deutschland, wo du mit dem Boxen angefangen hast? Wann bist du nach Deutschland gekommen?
96.
Also mit 12 zum Boxen gekommen und mit 13 angefangen?
13.
Mit 12 nach Deutschland und mit 13
genau.
Boxen. Okay, he came over to Germany at the age of 12 and 1 year later he started boxing.
I see. Okay, yeah, thank you and good luck in the fight.
Appreciate it.
Okay, I'm going to make the transition, and Bruce, if you want to continue with your announcements while I get
sure.
Bernard on the line.
Okay. Thank you from Germany. We appreciate you guys being accessible and look forward to seeing you next week. Couple of housekeeping notes while we're waiting for Bernard. I wanted to once again thank our partners at Showtime, Stephen Espinoza, our partners at Caesars, who are always such great hosts for us and for the media when we go to Atlantic City, and Corona and AT&T as well.
Yes.
A couple of things to put on your calendar for next week, just so you have it. I'm sure Lisa and Marilyn will send it out to you as well. But keep in mind that Wednesday at 12:30 will be the final press conference at B.B. King's in New York, in Manhattan. So if you're in and around the area, that's the time. Thursday we'll have media roundtables in Atlantic City at Caesars. Friday, of course, is the weigh-in, which will be in Caesars, in the lobby at Caesars, starting at 3:30 p.m. And then on Saturday, for the media that's down there, we're going to have a somewhat special event starting at 4 p.m. We're going to have a press conference featuring the Adrian Broner and Marcos Maidana, and that will also be at Caesars. And from there, you can make your way over to Boardwalk Hall, where the doors open at 5 o'clock. So the timing should work for everybody.
Okay, and we do have Bernard on the line. So if you want to formally introduce him, then we can keep moving forward with the call. Thanks.
Thank you, Lisa. You know, I every time I'm asked to introduce Bernard in a formal or an informal setting, it's always so tough because there's so many things, so many great things about him professionally, and I believe so many great things about him personally. He's just such a terrific guy. But the one thing I wanted to say today is that, you know, and I mentioned it at the beginning of the call as well, is that it occurred to me that I think we take Bernard for granted. You know, we've been part of our lives as fans for so long that we continue to think, wow, Bernard's fighting good. I can't wait. But as I mentioned, I'm pretty sure that he won't be doing this forever. So I just wanted to once again point out, you know, what an amazing man he is and what an amazing career he's had, and how absolutely astonishing in relation to professional sports of any type his accomplishments inside the ring have been. This is not the senior tour. This is not the Bush Leagues. This is a guy defending his light heavyweight world championship belt, a guy who's, you know, and I don't have to recite all of his stats, but, you know, who has defended his middleweight title 20 times and had some of the most classic fights in the history of the sport. I, for one, am excited to see him, and I know I speak for everyone at Golden Boy when I tell you all that we're very proud to be in business with him, and we look forward to seeing him next week, Bernard Hopkins.
Yes, thanks, Bruce, and Lisa and everybody, and I know Kelly is feeling under the weather. She came to Philly, she didn't feel too good then, so I'm not really surprised, but I hope she gets better. I'm here, and I'm ready to go, Bruce, and everybody that's listening. And, you know, good to be back home in Atlantic City where my first fight was at in 1988, and you know, been there a few times, but, you know, to come there again at this stage is pretty exciting. It's pretty exciting in a lot of ways, and you know, this never gets old for me, and that's when the love is still there and the energy is still there, because this never get old for me. And, you know, you can't do it all your life, but it never gets old. And when it gets old, it gets kind of through the motions, and when that happens, then there's, you know, can't be nothing negative and positive come out of that. So, but I'm looking forward for next Saturday to again continue to add another page to this this long book.
Okay, great. For Zelda, can you open it up for questions, please?
Yes. Once again, if you would like to ask a question or have a comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. That will place you in the question queue. Once again, if you would like to ask a question or have a comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. And our first question comes from Dan Raphael with ESPN.
Hello, Bernard.
Hey, Dan. How you doing, man?
I'm good. My question for you, Bernard, we've been on a lot of these calls, but usually on these calls you're fighting – you know, either challenging for a world title or you're fighting a big name. You yourself have said leading up to this fight, admittedly, it's a mandatory. You need to get it done in order to get a bigger fight. I wonder from you, Bernard, because this is probably your least recognizable opponent in, I mean, I couldn't even tell you how long. How do you still get up for this kind of fight, knowing all the huge fights that you've had in your career?
Because I know that it's light at the end of the tunnel. And in this case, there's what I consider a super fight at the end of this tunnel, whether it's my division or some other division. But I know one thing, Dan, is you before you get to the titsy roll, you gotta do a lot of licking, and that's not in a disrespectful way, but it's in a way of knowing that, you know, you gotta get through the prize before you get down the end of that box of the Cracker Jacks and you get the prize. But, you know, you got to get through these things. These things is part of the business, whether you like it or not. And I'm going to Atlantic City like it's a super fight, knowing that I have to be on my A game no matter who I'm fighting at this stage of my career, especially when the opponent is not really known in the States like myself.
So is that then, I was going to ask, that's what motivates you to do the running in the morning and do all the things you need to do to prepare for the fight, even though it's not, you know, a Trinidad, a Pavlik, a Carver, whoever across the ring from you?
Yeah, because those guys is long gone. And you know, a lot of my era, you know, I'm in the second era of somebody else's era. I'm in the Bronin and the Danny Garcias and other fighters I can mention era. I extended the era of my era to this era. And I just have to just go ahead and just go in there with that youthful thinking, with the body that you and a lot of other reporters that's listening reported, you know, my lifestyle. I mean, I don't think nobody really, really, if they look at it, be surprised that I'm really here. That I guess they'd be surprised why I'm still doing it, because I shouldn't mentally, physically be motivated to do it anymore. But that's not necessarily true when it comes to Bernard, because I'm ready. I'm ready, and I'll always be ready, and I'll never go in a ring without being prepared physically and mentally. And so I look at myself ending my career with a super fight, and people is going to remember that. But this here, to me personally, it's not a super fight in boxing, but it's a super fight to me, because there's no other fight if this fight is not completed the way it should be with Bernard Hopkinson, with myself. So I know how important it is for me to get to that again, that titty roll at the end of the tunnel, that prize, that thing you got to work through. This is just an obstacle. And my obstacles can be kind of nagging sometimes. And I got to get through the obstacles. And the obstacle is what it is. It's there. And, you know, I had 20 of them, Dan. You know, and I wanted a lot of fights. But the mandatories came up, and I wound up breaking records and setting records. I didn't even know I was doing it until I got close to it, and somebody reminded me from the boxing historic world. So, I just want to keep. It ain't gonna be too long, but just get past this one, and then I have the freedom by the rules to be able to at least have multiple months to be able to make some big fights in between, not waste time looking for one, but at least knowing that there'll be one on the horizon.
Well, I'll just end with this thing. You mentioned you're still around. This week, the Boxing Writers Association made their Hall of Fame votes, and two guys much younger than you, who you beat years ago, Gilles Trinidad and Oscar De La Hoya, were on the ballot, and you're still here, a champion. Congratulations.
Yeah, that is something. I read that.
Thanks a lot, Bernard.
All right.
Our next question comes from Lem Satterfield with RingTV.com.
Hey, B-Hop, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good, man. Relaxing, sitting back, just on these interviews before I hit the gym at 3.
All right. Hey, one quick thing. My son personifies the length of time between now and when you won your title from Segundo Mercado, because when I went to cover that fight, he was about a month away from being born, and he's 18 years old now. So,
wow.
Give you some perspective.
95, man. Yep, 95. He's, time go by, don't it?
Yes, it does. Listen, I wanted, if you're not motivated now, you might be motivated by some of the things that Cairo said. First of all, he was 5 years old when you began your professional career. He said your loss to Clinton Mitchell is what's going to happen now. You began with a loss in Atlantic City, and you're going to end with a loss in Atlantic City. He also said, and this, I don't know where he got this from, but he said, your gray beard and your gray hair are evidence of your age, in addition to the clinching you did in your last fight with Tavoris Cloud and others, and that Cloud fought a dumb fight. Your reaction?
I mean, that's his information. His information is what he's registered and what he's responding on. And when you have information and it ain't correct totally, then you have the wrong information. And everybody knows in history and even life, when you get information, you got to look at the information and take it with the information what it is. And so far as I'm concerned, he has the wrong information, whether he came up with that information by, I guess, looking at the fights or being told by his handlers or whatever. When you have the wrong information, based on his statement, I'm already up 4 rounds on him. So, well, when you've been in the game so long and you hear guys say the things that they say, you know, I'm not surprised at this stage of my career, but he's 29 or 30 years old, and he's talking like a 30-year-old. He's talking like a young fighter. There's two things that he said that stands out. So when he used, say, gray, he's talking old. Well, y'all heard that before, and obviously he's not paying attention to the guys that I fought was 10 years younger than him, or at least 8 or 9 years younger than him. So you got to erase that. Then he's looking at, okay, he clinches and he holds. to me, that was an offensive-defensive fight to the T, a masterpiece. But he sees something different that others didn't see or even think there was something I was doing inappropriate. So when you're young, you try to find excuses why a 40-year-old guy shouldn't beat you. And when you get in the ring and you realize you're in the ring with me and you see that it ain't as easy as you might see, you know, that's the ultimate shock and surprise. Always, always catch a person that's not prepared off guard. The unknown is not actually knowing or not knowing what you see. He's seeing what he thinks he's seeing, but it's a whole new different story. And this is an experienced guy talking to you. When you get in that ring and you realize that you're not faster than me, you realize that you're not an all-around fighter better than me, you realize that it's stages in life like it's stages in boxing. When you get in that ring and you come with a chess checkerboard and you're trying to beat me and I got a chessboard playing chess, then you situation where you're like, oh, my God, like he's really is an alien. He started admiring my work. He's going to start admiring and being happy that he's there. And he'd be able to tell those stories like he said to you and others that listen, that's listening to me right now. He was 5 years old. He was XYZ years old. He was here when I done this. So he watched my accomplishment. He's already in awe about Bernard Hopkins. He's already lost four rounds.
Mm-hmm. One other thing, I guess one thing I did ask is you talked about wrong information. I scratched my head. I said, when was the last time I saw you with gray hair or a gray beard? I mean, when was the last time I saw you with hair on your face? And it did occur to me what fight he might be watching, because from most accounts, the Tavoris Cloud fight was a masterpiece. Your thoughts on that?
Well, one is he might have caught me when I was didn't have a shave, but most of the time, like now, I'm skinned from the top of the head to the chin of my chin. So I don't know what photo he might have seen, but no question, I have gray. No question, my hair grows. I'm gray beard and gray everything. So, but the greatest wisdom, he's looking at the outside of it, but he's not looking at the man in the body itself. And that's what a lot of these young guys get fooled at. You know, Cloud was one of them. Pavlik was definitely one of them. He hadn't been right since. And a lot of other young ones was fooled based on age, because a lot of them parents are my age or a year too young or a year too older, and they ain't in good shape. So they home or they see them every day, whatever they at, whether they live home still with them or not, they see them and they see their condition. And they say, well, can't nobody beat me that's 40 years old. And they get illusion. They get the illusion that I'm like them. And so when they get in that ring, they get the first peek at the press conference. Then they get the second peek at the weigh-in. And then they get the third peek when they're actually in the ring. They be like, man, I can't hit this guy. Man, this guy, every time I hit him, I get hit four times. Those subtle little things that only a few fighters in the world have, and I can count them on one hand. And that's Bernard Hopkins, and one of them is Floyd Mayweather. When you're in there with that type of pedigree and that IQ, and you come in with a checkerboard to a game that from A to Z and some, the plus sign, unless I completely discontinue this blackout of knowledge the night of the fight, he has a chance. And that's something that nobody will bet against. Bernard Hopkins comes one way or the other, love him or hate him, he comes right and he comes ready, whatever happens. And Morocco will understand that he's in there was totally different than the European fighters that he fought. So welcome to the United States. It's a whole different ball game. It's a whole different style. He haven't been in the ring with anybody with the attributes and the skill level and the knowledge of a Bernard Hopkins, unless you talk about Cleverley.
Thanks a lot, Bernard. Appreciate it.
Right.
Our next question comes from Steven Jurgens with Sports Build.
Hello, Bernard. Thanks for taking the time. What would you say, what is the most important lesson that you learned in boxing or in life that has made you the person that you are today, a boxer that can still, at this age, excel and beat guys up?
Never take anyone for granted or lightly. Always look at your opponent as the enemy who's trying to take your spot, who's trying to take everything you work for or try to enhance his career off of your legacy. At that time, early in my career, off my career. So that's one. I gave you a couple of answers, but never underestimate your opponent, the art of war. The art of war, which is a fine roadmap for me for over 15 years, even before I came out of prison. The art of war, never underestimate your opponent. Never underestimate your enemy. Never underestimate the next general. You always have to take everybody from what they were. And that is, they believe they're going to beat you. They're going to try to beat you. You have to change their mind.
Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question or have a comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Our next question comes from Jenna Jay with OPR Boxing Radio.
Hi, Bernard. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Bernard, recently I had a chance to speak with Brother Nazim Richardson, and he said this type of fight are the kind of fights that he hates, because the guy that you see in the ring isn't going to be the guy that you see on video. I'm curious for you, how are you preparing to fight someone like Karl Morat? And I know most of the cases it's how is he going to prepare to fight you, but, I mean, how are you preparing to fight him?
I mean, I take every fight seriously, and Nazim Richardson thinks like I think, because, you know, everybody know the big names in the light heavyweight division, and everybody knew the big names that I fought in the middleweight division. You can prepare for them easier than you can prepare for a guy that, you know, nobody actually knows and never fought anybody in the States or anybody that's on my level. So it's the fighter. It's the person itself. It's me. It's how I approach it mentally, physically, and prepare for it. That would make Nazim feel on that part a lot better, because, you know, he's dealing with a guy that don't look at anybody as he's not this guy, so I'm going to be light in training, or I'm going to be light in my thinking, or I'm just going to overlook this guy. That's the tricky part of a veteran compared to a younger guy. A younger guy would probably blow it off. Well, he's no big name, just a mandatory. Let me go ahead and do what I got to do and get out with. No, I don't look like that, because, A, I'm at the age where I can't have a mental block. B, if this big fight is what I want to do before I leave, and I must get past the roadblock. I must get past the mandatory of the obligation. So these fights can be nagging, and it's been a pain, really, in a way, ever since it's been postponed. So it's been more than just, you know, what Nazim was saying, which is true, but it's even further that it should have been over with July 13th. But nevertheless, he has more time. He got more time. He needed more time, and he got it. Fine. I enjoy my summer with my family. I had a chance to get to the business part of the promotion with Golden Boy, and now we're here. So pick back up the pieces, start back up, go do it again, and now we're here. So I'm prepared to do what I have to do, but this is the unique. Bruce said it earlier. Somehow, sometime, people, not all of us, take certain things for granted. And I'm going to make sure I do all I can so no one takes me for granted before I leave the game, because there's going to be more eye-opener stuff and mouth-dropping stuff that people are going to say, this is amazing. Where do we put this guy? Where do we put this legend? Where do we put this icon? Whatever name you want to give me, where do we put him at before he leaves? And that starts, to me, 20-something years ago, but it also starts right now.
Great. I have one more question for you, Bernard. You said that you see the light at the end of the tunnel. With this particular fight and at your particular age, do you think a stumble against Karl Morat could could mean the end for you, because he's not the type of level fighter that you're usually used to fighting. If you have a stumble here, do you think that could be the end?
See, the thing is, I mean, it will definitely not be good for me. It definitely won't be good for what I have in my plan. I'm not preparing to come to another guy's level. See, I learned no matter what, I have to make this guy bigger than what he is. I make this guy as threatening what he is. My sparring partners was really, really, really vicious dudes, and they was coming, and one of them was a cruiserweight. And I had to use my legs to get away, not try to use strength for strength. Why do that? Use my brains, use my intelligence. You know, today in the world, boxing, man, in the world we live in now, in boxing, it's sort of a curse to be a slick boxer right now. You know what I mean? So I mean, it's a curse. I mean, I don't know if the MMA, the UFC had anything to do with that, but to influence that. But, you know, I'm from the sweet science, as you mentions all the time when I read articles. And the sweet science, you have to know what that means if you understand boxing. And so I prepare to fight anyone. I mean, I had 20 mandatories in the middleweight division. And I'm not going to sit here on the phone and anybody's listening and say all of them was the Hall of Famer fighters. They shoved down that thumb. They shoved it on the table. I ain't going to say that on my throat. But I had a choice, fight him or move on or get a title up. So this is another situation, deja vu all over again. But I would not go in there. I would not go in there knowing that this is the carrot that's hanging out there for anybody that like titles out there, any young guys that like titles, anybody that want a unification, anybody that wants to do it. Now, you can have a title. So it's back to deja vu. Here's a title. Come get it. Here's the caviar. Here's the bait for the fish. So trust me, Karl Marat is not a guy I'm sleeping on or underestimating. And he's going to see that early. Can't nobody fight for me. Can't nobody fight for him. They're going to call me probably, which is not a popular name right now, they're going to call me a bully. After this Saturday, next Saturday, they're going to say, oh, Bernard, this, you know. So it's really not a win-win for me. It's really like, okay, it's a throwaway fight. But I'm not treating it like that, but I know others are. So I'm not going to gain more superstardom because of Karl Marat. I mean, I'm no fool, but I might be called a bully. Okay, I've been called that in high school, elementary school, in the streets, in boxing when I was middleweight. You know, hey, so it's cool. I mean, I'm not saying that I accept it, but it's cool. Right? You can do what you want to do. But at the end of the day, the story becomes he beats Bernard Hopkins. That's the story. I beat him. What else is new? So I understand that. So it's more than just Karl Marat. It's a lot of intangibles that surround this name and this fight. And I have the ability and the mindset to handle all that because that's what I do, and that's what I've been doing basically majority of my career, handling difficult situations that would break the average man.
Well, Bernard, thank you for answering my question, and thank you for your time. All the best next Saturday night.
No problem. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Michael Woods with Sweet Science.
Hi, Bernard. My question is this. No disrespect to Karl Marat, but frankly, his resume doesn't suggest he's near your caliber. So I wanted to actually pivot to something you referenced yourself, a super fight in the near future. George Willis and I were at HBO for the doc, Gaddy Ward doc screener last night. Both of us agreed that a Bernard Hopkins fight against Floyd Mayweather would be a lot of fun in the promotion and an intriguing fight. So I'm wondering, have you had even a preliminary discussion with Team Mayweather and Golden Boy about that fight? And if it took place, what weight would it take place at?
Well, first of all, I had no conversations, but it was a conversation said to me, and that's why I responded. And when I realized that there is a fight that they owe him in March of next year, I believe May, excuse me, of next year, and whether I'm willing or can I make 160, and I said, well, if I got that much time, a guy like me, the way I live and the way I keep my body right, even 6 pounds from fight night next week, sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, so I don't know, you know, they didn't look like they was joking, and we're talking powerful people. So I'm sitting back saying, okay, you know, hey, you know, because no one else going to beat Floyd Mayweather in their 20s and even in their early 30s. Not this checkerboard mentality, young fighters who can be great later, but right now they just don't have the degrees to do it. So that's the only reason I threw my hat in there. You know, after the sixth or seventh round, you know, when you got two people looking across at each other saying, doesn't look like it's going to happen tonight. And I said, you got that right. So my thing is it would be at 160 pounds. It would be at a weight division. Oh, that's what I'm saying. It would be at a weight division that the history, and can you imagine the promotion of the 10-plus years that I held down that middleweight division and made those defenses. So, like, I look at Henry Armstrong, I look at all them other guys, even De La Hoya, who's not a big middleweight, who came up to challenge Bernard Hopkins at 60 because I cleaned everybody out for the only belt that I didn't have, which was the WBO belt. So this happened in history before. You hear people say a guy's too big, guy's too small in weight divisions, this guy's this, this guy's that. Okay, but it's been done by historic great fighters before. So that's what I'm saying. But right now, you know, Saturday becomes a thing. I can let everybody off the hook if I just get brain dead Saturday night and they be saying, okay, got him out of the way. So I got to make sure that mentally and physically, because I get that question all the time in the last week, and I should have. But I keep reminding people, okay, yeah, I mean, it's a possibility of anything. I'm not chasing anybody. I'm not standing in line anybody. I'm not trying to pick on a little guy. But if you can find somebody that people want to see fight after that performance, masterful performance of a king chess player that we witnessed less than 2 months ago, good luck. Good luck.
Last time you made 160 was 2005, sir. Wow, the time has flown. But you believe that you can do it and no problem, really?
Hey, listen, how many times I've been right when I said I can do something and or wrong in my career as long as you've been following me? That's
I never bet against you. I never
listen. I know it won't be easy. Listen, what I'm saying. That's the fun part. I mean, this is what people do, like yourself and others that's listening. This the fun part. Can you imagine the fun part be like, we're going to put a camera on Bernard, our access, and we're going to watch Bernard with Mackie Shostone, who helped Bernard leave from 160 to jump two weight classes to go to 75, which no fighter, well, only one fighter attempted to do that, and that was the great, late Sugar Ray Robinson, the fight in New York City at Yankee Stadium, where he couldn't come out to the 15th round because it was 100-something degrees, and they changed one referee and gave him another referee because the referee got fell out of heat in that fight. So to do that and to make history, I would love to put a feather in my cap to go down two weight classes and after coming up two weight classes to make history with Tarver almost 7-6 years ago. I mean, can you imagine the all access? Can you imagine the promotion for that fight? Because, I mean, I'm not a shy guy, and I don't have a shy camp. So you don't have to pinch me or stick a needle and get me to do something out of my character to get hyped. No, because you have two chess players in there, and someone say, well, two chess players be a boring fight. No. Because somebody's going to have to go ahead and be able to be out of character. And the bottom line is, after Saturday, it's a whole options out there for me. The light heavyweight division has more than a heartbeat right now with some dangerous punches in the boxing game right now, which has got a lot of people excited, got a lot of people saying this guy, which is definitely the truth, is blasting everybody there. I'm in a society now where they like knockouts, not skills. Okay, great, fine. You know, I'm the last of the Mohicans. I'm gonna see if my skills can survive with punches, with the bang 'em out, sock 'em, rock 'em robots. So let's see what happens. But definitely this Saturday in Atlantic City at Caesars or Boardwalk Hall, I have to make sure that I get past this obligation. And then, you know, they might be calling me a bully because I'm going to pick on everybody. And they're going to wonder, boxing people is going to wonder, why is the people letting a guy who everybody should be knocking on the door saying, let me go and get this old man out of the way, but instead they run in with fear. I live in a different era than my era. I'm in a whole new different two era, man. It's kind of a little strange to me, but I understand. But it's still strange, but I understand. I don't accept, but I understand.
Thank you, Bernard.
Okay, you're welcome.
Our next question comes from Dirk Hoffmeister with Sports.
Yo, hello, Bernard. Thank you for taking the time. I'm like to going back to Karo Muad. What do you know about him? What do you know about his special skills? Do you have a special eye on it, maybe?
Do I have any special skills? I never heard of anybody has special skills. You know, I know just as much as you know. I mean, even though you have an accent than myself, you might know more than me. But, you know, I know what I see. I see that a guy is coming for an opportunity to become a world champion, and I was at that place at one time. I respect that a man done something to get where he at. You can't, you know, I'm no fool. I'm an old fox, F-O-X. And I understand when you work your way up to get to a position like I did to fight Segundo Mercado in 94 and 95, I understand that wherever I see and whatever I think, he's going to be 10 times more than that because he's fighting for a world title. And he's fighting someone that can make him a superstar overnight. You can't overlook those things if you got any sanity of reality. That's going to be a problem that I think that way for my opponent. That's not good if you're fighting Bernard Hopkins and he understands how significant I think, which is the number one contender. I know how he thinks. Why? Because he was 5 years old when I won my title or when I had my first fight. So I know what he's thinking. I know how he's feeling. I know how he's motivated and energized. So you can't look at anything that he did last week, last year, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and say to yourself, oh, man, this is going to be easy. No way. I'll let the reporters, I'll let everybody else's opinion. Great, fine. But I know anybody that fights Bernard Hopkins that fought Bernard Hopkins, except for one or two guys in my career, and that was early in the 90s, they come to fight me because my record and my history and the way I work and the way I come in shape, they come to get beat up in shape or they come ready. And if I have a mental lock or a mental block, rather, it'd be a problem. So he will look a lot better in spite of what's going to happen to him. He's going to look a lot better, and he's going to be game because that's his style. He's a game guy. He ain't going to be running. He ain't going to be trying to outbox me. He ain't going to be trying. That's not his thing. And if he do that, I'll definitely would be even easier. But I'm telling you right now that he's coming with his A game, and he's coming because he got an opportunity to fight for a world championship. And the last time he fought for a world championship, to my knowledge, was Cleverley. And he didn't pass the test. So he's been there before. He's been there before and he failed. This is second and maybe only chance. I understand that. I've been there too. I had a shot and I got a draw and I had to fight 6 months later to get a title. I understand his mentality. He haven't been through it yet. Only the first task, and that's now. And that's fighting for a world title for the second time. That's the only task that he can say and I can say that he has a little experience with.
Okay, great. Thank you. Another question. I saw you with the alien mask. Can you explain for me again the story behind this this mask?
No story. I mean, you understand the story, you know the story, you read the story, you want me to repeat the story. I don't feel I have to repeat the story again because you already know. I mean, I'm a smart fighter. And when you ask that question, I realize you already know what I said, you already read it. You want me to repeat it because you want to hear me say it again, and it's just really a waste of everybody's time, to be honest with you. you know what I said. Most people in the forum heard what I said. If you didn't hear what I said, if you told me something else, you should have been a little smarter and said, well, you know, I heard something about some alien thing, but what happened? I was told. Then I would try to give you a little piece. But you want me to repeat what you already know, and I don't think that's appropriate.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, buddy. Take care.
Our last question comes from Ignacio Suniga with True Boxing Heads.
Hey, how you doing, Bernard?
All right. All right, buddy. Good.
Last question. Just want to ask you real quick. What keeps you motivated at this point? 40, I know history, but what drives you? What keeps you going to keep going at your age, 48, still putting on boxing masterpieces?
One is because I'm not really paying attention that I'm doing it, and I'm in awe of myself saying I'm not in awe of myself saying I'm doing it because I'm 48. I just feel like now that I get a chance right now as a late bloomer and really peaked 10 years ago and really had a late career turning pro or winning my first champ, turning pro at 25 years old. Because I'm fighting late in my career, and I see that a lot of people is kind of saying, hey, man, you know, he shouldn't be doing it, or he could do it. I don't think he's going to do it. He should stop. He should do this. I think that's encouraging me a little bit more, to be honest with you. And that's really one of the real significant reasons that I continue to want to prove people wrong and not look at the age and let them focus on that and just continue to open their eyes and shock them, and then they become fans. And you know, you only can do something for a long time, no matter what the purpose is, if you still have the love and the respect for the sport and respect for yourself. And I'm a proud person of my legacy, and I'm a proud person of my last name. And I will never pimp. I will never exploit. I will never use in a way of cheat my legacy and my name just because. Just because it's something I'm not operating on. And I'm going to do it until I realize that I don't have to do it anymore. And that ain't 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. That's only a fight or two. To be able to do what I do and make sure that when I leave, that is no regrets that I should have did one more thing. And that's the only thing. I don't want to be the Marvin Hagler who's still talking about the Ray Leonard fight. I don't want to be one of those guys that, you know, when I promised my mother to make her feel good, to make her feel great, and I really felt that way, and I got to that stage where it was time to do that and never come back. Well, just imagine what I would have left out there and never on a table. Forget the finances, but this, what I left on the table, historic reasons why. You know, look at the Tarver fight. After that fight and the fights I've accomplished then to now, that would have never happened if I'd have kept that promise. If I'd have kept what I said to that statement to everybody that it was said. There's so many great things that I accomplished right after the fight. When I won the lightweight championship, that was a perfect way to go out. And then you look at another career I started. I mean, this is something that, you know, people might take me for granted, but when they look back and they start analyzing Bernard Hopkins, they're gonna believe that. Well, how did this get passed? We didn't get passed. You just didn't pay attention. You were so caught up in the other stuff that, you know, that promotes today's fighters. That's good. That's fine. You know, I don't walk around with $2 million in a suitcase. I'm not, you know, I ain't about that. I ain't going to show this. You don't got to know where my house at. I don't care how many cars you know I got or how many cars I don't have. You know, that's this world. Y'all can have that. I don't want that. But when you sit back 10 years from now or 15 years from now and you start going through my history, my legacy, there are going to be some out there that's going to say, man, I didn't know. I mean, like you was living under a rock. You missed it. And I'm just trying to tell people, I warn people, don't miss it. Enjoy why we're here. Enjoy the things that you see that you can tell your son or you can tell your daughter. You can tell anyone, I was there when this man became this and became that and when he did that. I mean, that is something you can live with. Whether it's baseball, football, boxing, or whatever, I can tell my son about Michael Jordan. I can tell about Julius Erving in Philadelphia. Those are legacies, if you're a sports person, that you would like to pass on to the next generation, and even the generation that's not here yet. That's how I feel, man. That's the love that keeps the burning in my body to be able to do what I do and look like a chiseled rock as I talk to you right now on this couch before I go to the gym in another hour and a half.
That's some true talk. Love it. Love it, Bernard. And I think that's why the fans love you. Thank you for an honest answer. I do appreciate that.
Thank you, man. Have a good day.
I actually think Lem Satterfield has a follow-up question.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Griselda, can you take that follow-up, and then we can have Bernard make a closing statement?
Todd, I just had one question. You mentioned something I thought was interesting. You said it's a curse to be a slick boxer today. Can you please define what you mean? I think I know what you mean, but if you could put it in
your... No, I know you want some... No, it's no problem. I mean... Go ahead, you finished? I'm sorry, I cut you off.
No, that's it. That's what I wanted you to do.
I just been hearing and seeing things for the last couple of years, and I just been kind of like disappointed that in this day and time, the change of what the boxing and sweet science is about has sort of gotten to a barbaric. It's already that in a way of what we go through. But when you take away the skill and you take away the slick and you take away the boxing ability and say that's not entertainment and that's not entertainment, then to me it's like trying to erase a culture that you know that dominated this sport way back then where you were slick. And I'm talking about black fighters. Yes, I said it.
Yep.
I'm talking about black, inner-city, African-American fighters. I'm not talking about a Mexican fighter. I'm not talking about a Polish fighter, Irish fighter, or any other fighter. I'm talking about a black fighter that's slick, that can throw punches, the Ray Robinsons, the Ray Leonards, the Roy Jones Juniors, the Bernard Hopkins, when I want to do that style, I can do that style, and many, many, many others. So when you wipe out the concept and put that out there and feed that to the public and to the world that want to pay for fights and watch fights, they look at the fight and be turned off, not looking at the skill to hit and not get hit, to take a guy's weapon and use it against them. And they started saying, well, I like the Toyo Gatti and the Mickey Ward fight. Great guys. They need to be in the Hall of Fame. If they're not in there, they fought bloodbaths. But I didn't see skill. I didn't see skill. I seen heart. I seen don't duck. And I seen the will to win any means necessary in a way of even if it's stupid to you or to your health. What happened in the world of boxing? We became so violent in this country where skills is not even looked at as a thing where it's an honor to get your degree and say, I got a degree. I got my bachelor's. I got my master's. I got all these things. And it becomes so what? And so that's what I meant. And that's what I'm saying when they see me Saturday. They're going to see all of above. They're going to see the inside, the outside. They're going to see multiple styles. That's going to be all the things that I have done to beat fights that people thought I couldn't box. I couldn't roll. I couldn't do this. I couldn't do that. Man, I'm from Philadelphia. They invented that. So that's what I said, not only to you, but I said it to Bernard Fernandez. I said it to a few other people, and they said, you know, that's kind of interesting. It is interesting because I see the world that's trying to change the concept of boxing, and the amateur kids are believing. From the Joe Hans gym that I train at, and I'm around amateur guys all the time, and they kids, they 13, they 8, they 9, and they ask me, I said, look, you want to count your own money. And the way you count your own money is you duck many punches as you can. The people that's sitting outside eating popcorn, they want their entertainment money's worth. Be entertaining,
But understand that it's life after boxing. It's a conversation, hopefully, after boxing. So the moral of the story is, when you target that it should be a rock 'em sock 'em robot, and boxing skills, and being the way you are, in a way of hit, not get hit, and be slick, and be these things that we all admired at one time. I mean, Ray Leonard, I'll leave with this one. Ray Leonard, right now, the great Sugar Ray Leonard, who I was watching all this morning on YouTube, getting information. Yes, at this stage of my career, I still get information. That would make me different. The great Sugar Ray Leonard, right now, if he was boxing, the way they want you to fight, the people that pulls the strings of the puppet, he will be boring today. Ray Robinson, the great Robinson, will be boring today because the feeders of the people that buy entertainment are being fed that if they duck, don't buy it. If they slick and they beat 9 out of 12 rounds and the guy just can't hit him because they were slick and smart enough to hit and not get hit, he's not crowd-pleasing. He don't sell tickets because they didn't fed the followers and they didn't fed the customers. The customers would drink anything you give them if it's promoted, right? So that's my long answer. That's my long answer to your short question.
I kind of had an idea what you were saying. I just wanted to ask you one
I wanted to get a little bit more passionate with it to tell you how I feel, because when I hear commentators, when I hear certain networks, when I'm in the know and I'm air hustling, and I'm hearing these things, I'm like, they're not telling their kids ain't boxing. They family ain't in that ring. They ain't in college or going where they going. But who cares about somebody else's kid or somebody else's child? I was told, again, I'm in the world, but I'm not from the world. I'm of the world, but I'm not in this world. I'm in the era where if you duck, it's bad.
Are there any specific fighters?
Don't duck is good.
Are there any specific fights or fighters that you bring that come to mind?
What are you talking about? Any fighters that don't duck or whatever? What are you talking about?
No, I'm saying, are there any?
I don't know. Like any fighters that come to mind, and what, like, and
what? And what you're talking about? Fighters today.
Well, it's you got the Triple G. You're looking at a couple of guys that's out there that's, you know, because they punching and they're not using skills and they just throwing face. I mean, they made a big deal about the guy, Dinah Stevenson, being a fighter, being a guy that can box a little bit. You seen the fight, right?
Yep.
All right. One of the conversation is, oh, he got another arsenal to his game. He can box. You remember that?
Yep.
All right, now you're getting good now. You ask me a question, you go there, I'm going to go there. Why is that so significant? Why was that so important? If you're a fighter and you're a boxer, or you're a boxer or a fighter, why is it so shocking that a guy, he can box too? Because y'all was sold on not only just the big punch with Chad Dawson, whether it was legit or not legit, whether it was just a one-hit wonder or whatever, but they want him to fight and everybody else to fight that way. In today's society, they want you to fight like you're in the MMA or the UFC without being on the ground. And so when I see that, I got to educate the young kids that wants to take it, and some won't take it, to understand that there is a repercussion
right
to be one way and not the other. Boxing is an offense-defensive skill. People criticize Floyd Mayweather because of his offense and defense, and mainly his defense. I'm one of the most underrated defensive fighter since the early years of James Toney at middleweight. And so when you have these things, that's why I can talk to you and everybody on this phone that's listening without stuttering. That's important to me, to go to my daughter's school, my son's school, and talk to a teacher without embarrassing them later on when my career is way over. That's important to me. That's not important to the networks. That's on them. But I know it's important to me because, A, I'm a proud man. B, I understand the repercussions of not using the art the way it's supposed to be meant for us. And when you try to steer that if you want to be on TV and if you want to be in this position or that position and make the money and you put the glitter out there and you put the glitter as the money and the fame and the fortune, then you know you got to be excited. Well, what better than being excited when you're winning and keep winning? No, you got to be exciting. Well, what's exciting? So the Mickey Ward and Toyo Gotti saying that HBO showed for the last couple of days or weeks, my fear is going to entice and encourage the young fighters and the amateurs and the young pros to understand the sweet science of boxing. The great late Bowie Fischer, the Smokey Wilson is still in greater force since 1978. Hit and not get hit. I've been ridiculed and everything because, oh, he's boring, he's this, and that's why I'm still around at 48 years old. Don't they understand that I'm giving them the reason why personal in athleticism, why it's good to duck? I have two rules. I hit you, and I got to make you not hit me. What's wrong with that? Well, don't sell tickets. So don't get a good pay-per-view number. Okay. I'm just outsmarting a guy. Is it a curse to outsmart a guy without getting hit? In this world, yes. It is what it is. I can't change it. But what can I do? I can expose it to help another young fighter to understand that you're being told that is one way to be somebody. I'm telling you there's multiple ways to still be the guy that you set out to be. And I'll close with that.
Nard, thanks a lot. I appreciate it. See you next week.
Bye. Have a good day, y'all. Bye.
Thanks, Bruce. And Bernard, do you want to make a closing comment? And then Bernard, make a closing comment before we hang up.
Oh, okay. Want me to do it first? I'll just do it real quick.
Yeah, you go first.
First of all, thanks for being on. Thanks for giving me the time. Of course, next week, another chapter. Hope everybody come out to see it. If you can't, it'll be on Showtime Championship Boxing. I believe I get on at 10, 10:45 or 10:30. And our undercard is great with Gabriel Rosario and also Quillis, the middleweight champion. So, Kid Chocolate, let's come out, support it. Tickets doing very well. Lisa, thank you. Everybody is listening, thank you. And I'll see you next week.
Thank you, Bernard.
Thanks, Bernard.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us.
All right,
us
thank
today.
You, everybody. We look forward to seeing you in Atlantic City and New York.
Very good. Thank you. Bye, everybody.